Oh, he's gone. Gwen.
Hi, I can hear you.
Oh, cool. All right. Dennis has come and gone because he couldn't hear. I couldn't hear him. So he'll be back in a second, no doubt. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How are you?
All good here. All good here. Weather can't make up whether it's spring or summer or winter, but other than that, it's fine. All good.
Really? So what's the temperature now today?
I would say I only know the temperature in Celsius or centigrade. I would say it's about 11 or 12 outside. It was -6 or -7 this morning, and it's been like that for the last couple of days. And there's a wind that will cut you in two, as we would say in Ireland. Literally go straight through you. With the
Goodness.
result, that you probably don't get this kind of news in your part of the world. About 60% of this summer's wine crop was destroyed last week with by frost.
Oh, terrible.
So it'll be
Terrible.
the worst. It'll be the worst vintage in 40 years, apparently.
Huh.
So.
Yikes.
You see, the problem was the previous week, it was like summer here. So everything bloomed
Yeah.
and everything died.
Uh-huh.
So,
Oh, man, that's very disappointing.
well, you know,
Tell me.
we were mourning the passing of our gooseberries, but we were saying to ourselves, at least our livelihood doesn't depend on us growing fruit. So
Yes.
I don't know how you cope. Well, I do know you get aid from the government, but. There you are.
Wow.
Hello, Shelley. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. I'm in good form. Flying form. All is good here.
All is
My
well here too.
excellent. Exactly where are you, Shelley?
South Devon, so I'm near Torquay.
Oh, right. Did you tell me that before? I think you did.
Possibly on the Tuesday Facebook lives.
Yeah, possibly. All the Hortons are from Kingsbridge originally. That's a disapproving.
Oh,
Oh.
that no. I thought that was oh.
All right, okay.
I'm not from this area, so Kingsbridge is.
Kingsbridge is if you travel on out from Torquay, it's kind of down on a little finger. Well, it's not really a finger, it's more like the stump of a finger sticking out into the English
South
Channel.
Ham's Way.
Possibly. I don't know the place very
Hello.
well. Dennis.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, but I can't see it. That's cool.
No, I'm one step at a time here. Okay.
Michael is online, but Michael is Ilse Cash, as you'd say here in France. He's hiding himself. Well, there he is. No, he's gone again.
Good morning. It's
Hi, Michael.
almost 7 a.m. in beautiful British Columbia, Vancouver Island, a gorgeous day, but I'm going to eat my breakfast, so I'll have the camera off for the first
All
start of
right, okay. That's okay. That's allowed.
the day. Orange juice, just a tiny
Always
bit,
good.
not too much sugar.
Always good to eat.
Excellent. Mixed with a flute of champagne, no doubt.
That was too much of that last night, Willie.
Oh dear, oh dear.
It's all right. You
No, it's allowed. A little wash your fancy never did you any harm.
know what they say, everything in moderation, including moderation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dennis, how are you?
Doing good.
Cool.
My audio and video settings were off a bit, so I had to make some adjustments, so.
That's okay. It's okay. Well, I have no idea how many people we'll have today. It's the great thing about these. You have no idea. You've no idea if anyone will turn up. Well, Dennis, I kind of know you'll turn up, so it takes the excitement out of it.
Turnips are good, you know.
Yes.
And tulips.
Turnips and tulips. Our daughters have a food website called Lettuce, Turnip and Pea. I don't see what's so funny about that. Bad minds. Bad minds.
Very organic. I like it.
Right. I don't know. We wait for a moment if that's okay with you. Is there anything specific anybody wants to talk about?
You know, Willie, I woke up this morning and that was a good thing. I guess I woke up, but I'm hearing a lot lately. I don't know, on the internet and different or not organizations, but speakers out there keep going back to how we create our own reality. And I'm kind of fascinated in terms of leadership, you know, in terms of being a conscious leader, how we could be consciously or unconsciously creating our reality. And that's
there is the rub, isn't it? Because we're creating our reality either way.
So I'm just throwing that out there. Not that we have to go there, but it's just that it seems so interesting these days watching the media and the news and creating.
But it's like as if they're waking up to stuff that psychology knew in the mid-1930s or the early 1930s,
right,
that we can only perceive what we expect and we can only achieve what we expect. So if we don't set our own achievements, if we just leave our brain idling unconsciously rather than consciously,
right,
we're going to live to whatever expectations were thrown at us mindlessly when we were three or four years old. And I mean, literally thrown at us. It's amazing the number of, I was going to say women, but that may sound a little gendered, but it's mainly women I say it to, because I happen to be talking to a lot of senior business leaders in the UK at the moment, one-to-one, and they all happen to be women. And I've said it to each of them individually. And I just spit this out, and it's like you've hit them in the stomach. I say to them, oh, no doubt, you know, you're carrying around baggage with you, like, you know, somebody might have said to you when you were young and impressionable, why can't you be more like your sister? And it's like being hit in the gut by these people. And it's like as if this stuff was thrown at them. It might be by teachers in Holy Catholic Ireland. It would probably have been a priest or a nun. Most of often it is by children. And they don't mean it. It's just a throwaway right. remark. But that's the stuff that hurts little kids. And it's the stuff as a result of which they carry around with them for the rest of their lives. And that's an expectation. That's the reason I go back to basics, right. I suppose. Mm-hmm. If I don't do anything about that, I'm going to live down to my expectations. And I'm going to create the reality that confirms to me again and again and again that I'm not as good as someone else, whoever that someone else might be. Or I'm certainly not as good as I might think I should be. So you see, either way, we're creating our reality. And, you know, really as responsible adults, for starters, never mind leaders, as responsible adults. No, not even as responsible adults. Only a fool would live down to their expectations. Now, as a responsible adult, I could say to myself, well, I'm going to decide what expectations I want to have. And if I do that in a position of leadership, whether that's as a parent, for example, say, just take really simply for starters, as a parent, if I decide I'm taking responsibility for my own state of mind, I'm going to set my own expectations rather than live with the stuff that was thrown on me or dumped on me when I was 2 or 3 or 4 years old, then I'm going to break the cycle of dumping on my children. And children, we all know, look up to their parents. So for starters, you know, I'm leading my children. I'm still leading my children, even though they wouldn't be prepared to admit when we have conversations with them. If I misbehave myself, they'll tell me, you're not behaving the way you should be behaving as the leader of this family. I think they have their tongue firmly in their cheek when they say that. But say I'm the leader of a team or the leader of an organization, then if I don't do anything, if I behave unconsciously, mindlessly, if I can put it like that, I'm living down to my expectations and I am displaying to everybody else subconsciously, whether I know it or not, this is how I behave. I behave automatically. I am dead from the neck up. So it really doesn't matter whether or not you're dead from the neck up either. And so it flows. Simple as that. But Dennis, I think the key thing in relation to what you said a moment ago is that we're creating our reality either way. And it's awfully irresponsible to create a reality carelessly, mindlessly.
That's kind of, if we do it by default, then we're in a reality that's totally created by our conditioning and our programming. But if we're aware in the present, intentional, anything that happens around us really is neutral. We're giving it meaning. Our thoughts and our beliefs are making, quote, sense out of whatever it is that's in front of us. I mean, you're going to hear the same story on the news, and one person can say, ain't that terrible? That's awful. Someone else says, well, look, humanity's awakening. No wonder, you know, we've got, you know, racial disparities, and these things are kind of part of our human process to wake up. So you can look at it as, you know, the world's going to hell or the world's waking up.
Well, I mean, as you know, Dennis, two men looked out from prison bars. One saw mud and the other stars. And maybe you'll be able to tell me, was it Walt Whitman who said that, or who said it? Doesn't matter.
I'm not sure.
it's like one person's motivation is another person's stress. We see everything through our own lenses. And all we have to do is clean our glasses. That's actually all we have to do. All we have to do is turn up, take the glasses off, or maybe put on rose-tinted spectacles. And by that, I don't mean that we see the world in some kind of airy-fairy, positive-thinking way. I mean, it is that we see our world as we want to expect it to be. Which is, in other words, setting our own expectations. But you've picked up on another important point there. You said we're wandering around. If we're on default, we're wandering around living according to our own programming. That's half true. We're actually wandering around living according to the program of our tribe, if I can put it like that as well, our nationality, our political beliefs, the way in which we were brought, our religious beliefs, obviously, the way in which we were brought up in terms of, oh, you can, God is this way or God is that way. In Judeo-Christian tradition, we were brought up as hopeless sinners. I'm being exaggerating slightly, but for effect, and it's only slightly. So in other words, we have collective baggage that we run around with too. And that my collective baggage feeds off everybody else's collective baggage. So if I don't do something to change my expectations, it isn't just that as a leader, I am saying to everybody else, it's all right for you to be careless and mindless too. What I'm actually saying is, if you believe crap, that's okay. Let's all believe crap together. Because generally speaking, people do believe crap together. Otherwise, the world wouldn't be either crap or on the verge of waking up.
I think for me, talking again from experience, it could well be that with current situations in the future, it can be looked back on as the Great Awakening, because I know that for me for a lot of people, there is there can be a main trigger that literally like an alarm bell kind of wakes you up out of an unconscious mind, just to give it a definition. And for me, I could say that I was unconscious for probably 54 years. And within that being unconscious scenario, it wasn't until the latter years that I understood that patterns of behavior and scenarios that were just repeating themselves over and over. And you know, and then I started my healing journey. So a lot of what I learn is, it as regards the unconscious element, sometimes it's as within, so without. So for me, as a young child, being desperate for someone to love me, I was given a whole host of scenarios of people who were not going to love me, because the lesson for me to learn was that I needed to love myself first. And often, depending on your journey, depending on what challenges or lessons you are here to learn, I feel that it's not just the actual, when you wake up as a baby, you then are subjected to conditioning and programming, etc. I actually believe also that you actually come in with a load of issues from past lives that you're here to try and, are you going to solve it this time round, type of thing. So I feel that at the moment, the energy of the, what we call the collective, there are, I think there are 2 billion souls woken consciously at the moment through COVID. And there's another 4 million to go this year. So there is an awakening, and it will be from a triggered experience, which is often the case.
Yeah, awakenings are seismic shifts, if I can put it like that. And as a couple of clients have said to me, you know, I had an awakening. In the same way as you just said, you had an awakening. I had an awakening. I think most of us on this call at some point along the way have woken up. But the interesting thing about this is that many people are having an awakening at the same time. Yes. And that's the key thing. That is the big difference. A number of people have said, you know, to me, I'm sitting at home, I'm on a Zoom call like this. I have suddenly realized I can't expect the world to simply be the way it was a year ago now at this stage. I'm kind of in a state of denial, shock, trying to come to terms with it. And it's shaken me to my core. And the interesting thing is that it has caused me to wake up. But what's most interesting is I'm not alone. There are people all over the place being confined. There are people all over the place having lost loved ones as a result of not so much the virus itself as the ineptitude with which authorities have responded to the virus. But we won't go there. So people are waking up as a collective at this stage. And you know, we meditated, I think, at the end of the last session we had, and we talked a couple of sessions ago about the manner in which collective meditation releases a kind of energy that individual meditation doesn't. And certainly I've seen that if we come all the way back to where we started this conversation in relation to conscious leaders, I've seen that actually before my very eyes in teams of 8, 10, 12 people. Think about it in terms of 8, 10, 12 million people, 800, a billion people. Think about it in terms of, Dennis, you're regularly, and I need to look at what you send me in more depth, you're regularly sending me updates from the Heart Math Institute in California, and the link between little old me and the rate at which the Earth's magnetic field is vibrating. And if there were enough of little old me's suddenly going, ooh, and vibrating at a different rate, everything starts vibrating at a different rate. And there is a tipping point. Just don't know where the tipping point is. And we don't need to know, because if we come back to the point that Gwen made in the second last of our sessions, Gwen, as you said towards the end of that session, we are the people who need to wake up. We don't need to, you know, defer to anybody else in terms of me putting my best foot forward. It's my responsibility. It goes back to the word I used earlier on. I need to take responsibility for my own state of mind. On a very practical level, what does that mean? Let's take it in really practical terms for my daily being in an organization, because I know people on this call here are involved in organizations or involved in providing services to organizations as well. Excuse me. I was going to say I'll shut up. That would be very rude. I keep quiet so someone else can talk. And I'll have a glass of water.
I was just going to make a point there, because there were two words that came up there, just about us taking responsibility, but also Shelley talked about being triggered. And I had quite an interesting experience this week that sort of highlights everything we've been talking about in terms of interconnectedness and stepping up and awareness and awakenings and all that. So I am from Belfast, and I was very upset by the recent violence in the north. And because I feel like we've just gone back about 20 years. But something triggered me on Sunday. So my husband was sharing a joke on that had been put around on WhatsApp. Somebody had made a joke about Northern Ireland. And I just was like, that's just not funny. It's not even funny. I was really triggered by it. And he couldn't understand. He was like, wow, we're, you know. And I just realized, I said, you know, it upset me because I said, everybody's seeing it through this lens. And that's not what Northern Ireland is. It's about so much more. Same week, I saw somebody talking a few days ago about Minneapolis and saying this is not Minneapolis, you know. And I just thought, wow, there is somebody across the world. And the way they expressed it was, you know, I'm very proud of being from Minneapolis, and you know, this is really breaking my heart to see all of this going on. And I just thought, they just expressed what I was feeling about Belfast. And I thought, aren't we just so interconnected, the whole, and I felt like we were both having an awakening, because then we had this little conversation, because I said, listen, I hear you, and I, you know, I don't know who this person was, but it was online. I said, you know, I totally understand where you're coming from, because I feel exactly the same way about Belfast. And I feel like I've almost had another awakening, because I realized that if I tune into the awareness that, you know, this is about my perception, and I just have to open my mind and realize that not everybody, you know, is looking at it through that lens, and I just have to get over my triggers. But I just thought it was an interesting thing, because just Shelley and yourselves all talking about the, you know, it being sort of, we're all in, I just, there's a point about interconnectedness there for me somewhere.
I think it's a very important point, Justin, because I think we actually all experience interconnectedness, and very often we're so busy doing something else, or find it almost flippant. And you and I have talked actually before about a particularly coloured top or blouse or something, I can't remember. Yeah. Just in relation to interconnectedness, and this will sound perhaps silly to the general populace, but as you know, myself and Dennis set up a LinkedIn group earlier this week, and I invited some people, you invited some people, Dennis. And I happen to be in the middle of updating my website as well. Bear with me for just one second while I tell you this. Because I was updating my website to include a number of new reviews or testimonials that people had sent me. And I was just copying and pasting into a new HTML file a testimonial that was written for me about 15 years ago by a girl called Gabrielle Coultree. Right. As I was copying and pasting it, Lisa, who was inviting people on my behalf to this new group, turned to me and said, do you want me to invite Gabrielle Coultree? And at the same moment, I got an email from Gabrielle Coultree saying to me, how are you? I haven't heard from you in ages. Now, it's small, it's minor, but it is, you know, as Lisa says to me when something like that happens, because stuff like that happens to us all the time, is this how it works? And the answer is, it is how it works. And if that's how it works, why the hell don't we bloody wake up and play with it? And I don't mean that flippantly. I actually do something with it. Do something about it.
Yeah, it's like a game. Yeah.
So that was a rhetorical question. And the answer is, or the question is, how do you do it? I had experiences like that throughout my life, backpacking in Asia 40 years ago. And there's moments where there's absolute clarity to that stuff. And as a North American and a male, you go, oh, this is all weird. And you shut it down. And I don't know whether the body goes into some kind of protective state to say, I'm not going to let myself go through this awakening again, but it's absolutely essential. So How do you enable it?
Michael, can I ask you a personal question? 40 years ago, what age were you?
At 23.
Okay, yeah. It's. I got an email from somebody a couple of days ago to tell me that her husband had awakened, and he was like he was when he was 25 years old. The number of people who have said to me, I'd love to find my 22, 23, 24, 25 year old, because we're still carefree, which is not the same as the careless we were talking about earlier on, or most people, relatively, in the greater scheme of things, are carefree. And we're more likely to notice this stuff. And that's all we have to do to answer your question. Notice it. How do we notice it? We alert ourselves to the fact, to the reality of what's going on in the here and now. How do we do that? We turn up to the here and now. How do we do that? By training our minds to do that, by meditating. And in particular, I've had a number of calls about that this week, mini meditating. Somebody said to me yesterday, could you not call it something else? Because I made the comment to them that when I started talking about mini meditation a number of years ago, people kind of heard the word mini and dropped the word meditation and said to themselves, oh, mini must mean insignificant, so they don't do it. So as someone else I was talking to by pure coincidence yesterday said, you gave me some of those mini meditations. They shouldn't be called mini meditations. They should be called, and if you pardon what I'm about to say, kick-ass meditations. Because that's what they actually do in the cut and thrust of the day. Basically, I pull myself together, I press the reset button, and I remind myself that this is where it's at. This is where it's going on. I better keep my eyes open because the stuff going on that all of the time that I can't see with my eyes shut.
I think, Willie, just adding on to that from my own experience, you can have moments of meditation, you know, on a walk in a forest. You can paint a picture if you're an artist and be totally absorbed in meditation through painting or music. You don't have to sit in the corner, turn off the light, chant a mantra. You know, it's helpful if you can focus on your body through breathing. Willie, I think several of your meditations, it's a very kind of a bodily experience because you're really getting out of your mind and into the feeling nature of the body. But I know people who paint, who play music, and I know they're in meditation when they're in those states, and the synchronicities and so-called coincidences are happening all around us all the time. I mean, it's almost magical. You can even call them miracles, because if you look at it from the rational mind, you're saying, that, how could that be? That was just, you know, you think something, you turn on the radio, and what you're thinking about comes on the radio. I mean, happens to me all the time, or I'm driving down the street, I'm thinking something. I look up, there's a billboard, and there's a big word on that billboard that is actually tied back to what I was just thinking. You know, it's like this stuff is all around us, and we're so, I think we get absorbed in our internal chatter, our thoughts, our beliefs, the stories. We're regurgitating what happened yesterday, what we're going to do tomorrow. But we're not here in the moment, as Willie would point out, and more you're in that self-awareness in the moment. Then I think, Michael, getting back to what, you know, back in our 20s, carefree, you know, whatever we were doing back then, we weren't thinking probably about making a living, having a family, doing all these things that we like to obsess on as so-called adults. And it's that state of consciousness that is still there. And it really goes back to childhood, because I think, you know, when we're very, very young, we come in with that natural state of openness and allowing experience to be joyous for us. You can't make yourself be joyous. That won't work. So if you're looking for joy, you've got to let go, allow, and just kind of settle into that space that's already there. I don't know if I said that right or not, there's no right or wrong, but you just, it's like the doing versus the being. To me, it's the being that we've missed, and COVID has forced a lot of people to sit around and be, whether they liked it or not.
And whether they like it or not, yeah.
Whether our society on this planet is into doing, fix the environment, let's get rid of the nuclear missiles. I mean, let's do stuff to change all this stuff we don't like. I don't think that's the answer. That stuff will go away when we get back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago by being in our being and letting it kind of radiate out. And then almost organically, these things are going to start changing because of the consciousness and the awareness that each one of us is kind of radiating out into the collective. But I don't think humanity is going to reverse, you know, climate change. I'm not saying we can't do stuff, and there is stuff we can do, but maybe the answer to climate change is more being than doing. And if we be more, climate will just take care of itself. So I don't know. I've thrown a lot of ideas and thoughts out, but.
You made a couple of awfully interesting points. But just before I go there, I just had a thought. The way we develop psychologically, we're clear and present during our third, fourth, fifth, and sixth years, and diminishingly so up to the age of 12 or 13. Then we suffer from what is widely known as teenage angst, when I'm trying to be a cool guy or fit in with the whatever. And I, according to modern developmental psychology, I remain an adolescent till about 28 years of age. But I get over teenage angst when I'm about 19, 20, or 21. So do I go back to this clear state of mind when I'm 23, 24, 25? I wonder. Sorry, I'm wondering out loud, because so many people have said to me, I wish I could find who I was in my 20s. And it seems to be kind of almost a golden period. Sorry, that's me wondering out loud. Dennis, you've raised a very important point in relation to stuff looking after itself. And I suppose almost to come back to Shelley's point, the collective looking after itself, what Brian Greene in the book, The Fabric of the Cosmos, calls the underlying entity, looking after stuff like climate, for example. Can I ask a question? Because I ask all of my clients at one point or another, if they have something important that they're chewing on, if I can put it like that, that before they go to bed at night, they ask themselves an open question like, and Justine, you'll be familiar with this one. What's the next most important thing I have to do? And very often people will wake up in the morning and have, it might be what I might describe as a minor aha moment, but there's no such thing as a minor aha moment. Every aha moment is an important moment. And they realize there's something I have to do today that my thinking mind hadn't conjured up for me. It's not on any to-do list. It's just occurred to me. Has anyone ever woken up in the morning or even in the shower, decided, this is the most important thing I need to do today, and gone and done it? And whilst they were doing it, a load of other nonsense on their to-do list looked after itself? Because I know anybody I've ever worked with in business have had that experience. Because that's what you're talking about, Dennis, except on a slightly grander scale.
I think when I was working for the County Council in Northamptonshire, that happened a lot. If you did whatever was important, a lot of things just took care of themselves. But I'm finding more and more that that's not the case now, and I've just got to get on with it and do it.
Happy to see you're not 23 anymore. Sorry, I'm being slightly facetious. I think the key thing is we need to be carefree, which is the point Dennis was making in relation to, you know, people growing up and going into their 20s and not having all the thoughts associated with, oh, I have responsibilities. I need to get on in this job. I need to be nice to the boss, even though I don't like the boss. I have a mortgage. You know, all the rubbish that goes through our heads as people older than 28, 29. And then, as Shelley said earlier on, we get to a point in our 40s or 50s when some of us wake up. A lot of us don't wake up, by the way, or a lot of us haven't woken up yet.
So, Willie, how much of our carefreeness is bought up by our kids and spouses? I mean, you know, as parents, we always want to make sure that everybody's doing well. And I'm not talking about putting the burden on, or maybe I am. It's fungible. There's only so much space in the brain. And some of that time that's left for our turning up has to go and be distributed for our kids. How much of my carefree time is spent making sure my kids are carefree, or spouse, or things like that? So some of it may be just regular burdens, and some of it may be your immediate tribe. But I think what you've said earlier is you don't distribute carefreeness by trying to it. You distribute carefreeness by being carefree and that will naturally spread out, perhaps. Maybe people work too hard at being the perfect person.
Yeah, I mean, carefree, first of all, is a state of mind. It's like a client I have in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, who is in charge of a production facility for a major pharmaceutical company. It's a very old factory, and it's a chaotic place. And she tells me, as she comes into work every morning, her sole job is to spread the calm. Now, obviously, you can't spread the calm if you're not calm. So she has to be calm herself. If I want to spread the carefreeness, I need to be carefree. How much do I need to be carefree? As I said, carefree is a state of mind. I need to be carefree all the time, or almost all the time. In particular, when I'm interacting with other people. And that doesn't necessarily just mean face to face. I mean, for example, over the last couple of years, two of our three children have had particular burdens, as you've used the word a moment ago, that they needed to unburden themselves of. And in order to unburden them, I wrote what I would call a perfect moment. Now, again, people who work closely with me will know what a perfect moment is. I wrote an outcome for them that they wanted. I didn't tell them that I did, because their thinking minds would then say, "Yeah, what?" Because A, it's none of your business, and B, are you a weirdo or what? Even though they've grown up with this stuff. So I never told them, and they still don't know, even though in one case their burden was lifted 48 hours later, and in another case their burden was lifted 24 hours later. Out of the blue, completely and utterly out of the blue. I mentioned this, well, actually I didn't, because I'm almost afraid to mention that to some people, because it does go back to the collective. And a lot of people aren't ready to talk about the collective. But I had a group of people, old clients who I meet once a year, who I hang out with every September for a couple of days in Dublin. Didn't do it last year, obviously. We did it virtually online. But about 4 years ago, we were having a conversation together in a golf club in Dublin. And the conversation wandered into what Shelley would call the collective. And someone else in the group said, I write perfect moments for my children. And someone else said, "You what?" And someone else said, "Well, sure, of course you could do that kind of thing, because we're all connected, and we're particularly connected to the people who are close to us." Now, I'm not just close to my wife and kids. I'm close to my wider family. I'm close to anybody I am trying to. I don't like the word trying. I'm close to anybody on whom I am having or would like to have some kind of impact. In other words, the clients that I have, the people that I talk to on the likes of Facebook Live, who aren't clients, but, you know, I care for them. And ultimately, we are in connection with everybody, which goes back to the collective. So a carefree is something that I need to be all of the time, because if I'm not carefree, I am burdened. My energy is going in instead of out. My energy is being burned by me thinking about the worries and concerns and burdens of this world. And therefore, I'm no use to anybody else. Or I may actually add to other people's burdens as a result. Or I may be a loose cannon and do something dreadful simply because I'm mindless, carefree, mindless and careless, as distinct from being carefree. It all comes back to kick-ass meditation.
You know, Willie, I think many people don't understand that being carefree or even joyous, I think, is a choice. It's a choice we make. We open ourselves to allow that to happen. It's not something we force. We can make it happen, but we allow it. It's like an innate thing that's already there. We're just choosing intentionally to allow our state to be kind of in that, hate to use the word, but vibration. It's like an energy vibration that's always there. We can choose to be agitated and reactive. The world's going, you know, we can choose, you know, listening to the media and all the so-called problems in the world just to be crazy, you know, your normal crazy people state. I love your picture, Willie, by the way, on your PDF. It's like, I mean, we can choose that. And people, I don't think, realize, they think the world is doing it to me. I'm a victim. No, we're choosing. We're allowing that. We have a choice every moment. You know, do we breathe? Do we relax? Do we allow ourselves to be joyous or carefree? Or do we give our power away to all these things, so-called events that are happening around us, and just kind of get buffeted back and forth, you know, like a pinball? And it's very empowering to realize and have that aha that we're really not victims. That's just a story out there. It's a big story. There are millions of people that are telling the victim story every day. The media reinforces the victimization story. And so people get sucked into it, and it becomes default. And it takes a lot of courage and, you know, responsibility is a good word. I like that, Willie, that for a leader to be one, you know, to have the courage to just step into what really is rather than be subjected and allowing yourself to be just sucked into this chaos that appears to be, you know, the predominant energy, which I don't think it is, really. I think, again, it's we're creating our reality here. That in itself is a major aha. We're not victims. So I'll be quiet, but I just think.
Sorry, I know. Shelley, do you want to say something? Because I'm itching to say something, but go on.
Yeah, I am actually. Yeah. So coming back to the, for my research and studies is about your frequency and your vibration. So therefore, if you're using the Hawking scale of frequency and vibration, you experience certain emotional experiences, for want of another word, when your body is predominantly accessing a certain level of vibration, of which joy, peace, those are quite higher up. But that doesn't mean to say as well that you can't, as I know, following my own energies, you can't just suddenly dip down into fear and then guilt and then back, you know. You can, it is still possible with state of mind, with the meditation, to be able to maintain a certain level, so that for me, as being a highly sensitive empath, I do not watch the news, but I do feel the energies of the collective and certainly within my local area. So I have to do a lot of work on myself to protect myself from being open to those energies. The other thing as well was about knowing that, for me, that when you reach a certain almost consistent level of vibration, there are things that fall away from your reality. So whether that be negative people that are unconscious and are unable, you know, very judgmental, That sort of thing. Those people, they start to fall away. They're in your friendship groups. So coming back to what Dennis was saying, and I think the other point I want to make is that we're pioneers. Okay, this is like the first as regards the collective changing of conscious awareness. And I do feel that things will become easier the more amount of people in the collective that become conscious, that then start to make connections together, to then be able to hold these vibrations, hold these visions of the reality that we want to create. So that, you know, that's down the line. And yes, we're struggling against the flow a little bit at the moment. Not struggling, that's not the right word.
No, that's not the right word.
we're envisaging it. We're envisaging at the moment that there are many things that we would like to solve that in some ways may solve themselves further down the line. So that, I think that's all I wanted to say. There's a couple of other things, but they've drifted away now.
Yeah, I'm interested in, I'll come back to what I wanted to say about what Dennis said in a moment, but I'm interested in the idea of further down the line, because if my subconscious mind, and this is a fact, if my subconscious mind doesn't understand what psychology and for that matter, quantum physics calls the arrow of time, in other words, clearly in reality, there's past, present, and future, and time is always moving in the one direction. But my mind doesn't understand that. My mind thinks everything is present. And just to illustrate that very quickly, if I was told I was an idiot when I was a 3-year-old, I will behave now according to whatever piece of stored knowledge I was embedded in my head when I took the psychological snapshot of somebody telling me I was an idiot when I'm 3. And when the subconscious mind looks at that now to get me out of whatever fix I think I'm in now, it thinks somebody's telling me I'm an idiot now. In other words, the subconscious mind doesn't understand past, present, or future. My mind doesn't. Your mind doesn't. Nobody's mind knows it. So how further down the line is it? It could be tomorrow. It could be half an hour from now. It's the same guy I was going to mention. I had a client who spent 3 days with me here, August, I don't know how many years ago, and it doesn't matter. The first thing he decided that he was going to do when he went home to the UK was he was going to resign as the chairman of a charity for victim support. Which is back to the point Dennis was making. He said, all I'm doing is encouraging people to continue to think they're victims. I'm not going to do that anymore. This is the same guy. On the third day he was here, I asked him to write a perfect moment, handwrite what he wanted as if he had it already. Some of you know the science behind it, some of you don't know the science behind it. The science behind it is mind-boggling. This guy was an electrical engineer, and he followed me no problem for the first 2 days because we went through all the neuroscience in relation to how the mind works. And when we got to handwrite it as if you already have it, before I ever got into the science of it, he said, this sounds like BS. So on the final day he was there, I went into a bit of the science, and to be quite honest, this must be, it's certainly before we moved to this house, so it must be, could be 15 years ago. Some of the science wasn't available to me at the time because some of it was only 2013, 2014, 2015. He said, I'll humor you and I'll write something. I dropped him back to Geneva Airport on a Friday. He was flying, rather than to London, he was flying back onto Pisa to an electrical engineering conference in a monastery just outside Pisa. He rang me on the Tuesday morning and he said, my perfect moment just happened. He said, and it frightened the living daylights out of me. He said that hairs are standing up on the back of my head because I thought it was a load of BS. And actually, it turns out that it can happen, like, you know, Dennis used the word miracle earlier on. We have to open ourselves up to this stuff. So, you know, just coming back to the point you made, Shelley, further down the road, it mightn't be further down the road. Our thinking minds might think it's further down the road. But coming back to the point that Dennis made, because it relates back to the question, Michael, that you asked, you can't get up in the morning and say to yourself, right, I'm going to be carefree today. Because that's you addressing your thinking mind rather than your subconscious. Nor can you get up this morning and say, right, today is going to be a joyful day. By the way, just as an aside, that's why positive affirmations don't work, because you're not talking to the right part of your brain. Dennis made a very important point that relates to the question, Michael, that you asked in relation to how do I be carefree? And you just let go and let it happen. How do you let go? You immerse yourself in the reality of what's going on. You actually immerse yourself in the, I was going to say positive energy, but the energy of the collective, for want of a, well, maybe there is no better word. I don't know. And when you do that, you see what's going on. When you do that, you know what, as somebody said to me a couple of days ago, I never miss an opportunity anymore. And I always know what opportunities are right for me and also what runs are not right for me. I'm always tuned into the here and now, and it has changed how other people see me. And my relationships with those closest to me have changed, and they've noticed in the space of only a couple of days. How did she do it? She stopped paying attention to the rubbish in her own head. And as a result of which, other people who can't get away from the obsession of the rubbish in their own head, the negative people that Shelley was just talking about a moment ago, they go off, they go away. Some of them, by your presence, my presence, you know, if we go back to leadership, my presence is the rising tide that rises all boats. But some people have a hole in the bottom of their boats. They just don't want their boat to rise. So, and they'll go away. Sorry, I'm trying to prevent myself using bad language.
So, Willie, just to kind of add on to what you just said, it has become apparent to me over this last 12 months, actually, my whole life, that we are obsessed with evaluating and judging everyone and everything. Everything we see, everything we hear, our inner chatter, we're telling a story. Is it good or is it bad? Is it right or it's wrong? How can you be carefree if you're constantly judging and evaluating everything? It's when you don't judge and evaluate and just kind of witness. It's like you're watching a movie. You can go to a movie theater and watch a movie and you realize, oh, I'm just watching a movie. Now you may get sucked into it. You might cry. You might get, you know, into the emotion of watching. But when you walk out of the theater, you realize, well, it was just a movie. And every moment of our day is really like a movie. I mean, we have a choice as we're observing this waking dream we're in. You know, what is the dream? Is the waking state the dream, or is the dream the dream? Are they both dreams? Just like in a dream, we can wake up. Well, I think just like in the waking state, we can wake up from our waking dream. I know it sounds a little oxymoron there, but that state of witnessing, observing, I think is the key to being in the present moment and not getting so sucked into opinions, evaluation, judging other people, having to be right or wrong as good or bad. Or, you know, it's that part of our brain that likes to do that. But carefreeness, I don't think comes from thinking. I think when the thinking thing gets short circuit is when you feel carefree. Because why aren't you carefree? Well, it's probably because of your thoughts. Nobody's making you not be carefree. It's you've created this inner state of stress with these opposing evaluating habits that we have. And we work ourselves into stress and worry, anxiety, we're creating it. We're creating our own reality for better or for worse. So But there's just so much judgment out there in this world right now. You know, when you look at all the so-called problems of the world, even COVID, the vaccine issue, the whole thing, you know, there Johnson & Johnson, you know, is pulling their vaccine over here in the U.S. because 6 people out of 1 million had an adverse reaction to blood clots. So I look at the New York Times this morning, they're saying one view is they should never have done that because if you only have 6 people with blood clots and you have 1 million without, it's better to just keep doing what you are. Well, there's an evaluation. There's a judgment, you know, and there's no right or wrong. But we're so sucked into this seductive thinking, stressful mode that we just got to let go, as well as I like the word letting go and allowing ourselves to kind of sink into that just calm, still observer, which is really more in our heart, I think, than our head. Always, my personal meditation is I meditate in my heart. I used to meditate up here in my head and the top of my head. And it's interesting. I'm finding a deeper type of meditation by meditating in the center of my chest than at the top of my head. Sometimes I just go back and forth, but anyways, enough said.
Can I just pick up on a couple of things there? Because
sure.
First of all, I love Dennis's point about choice. I think choice is a really, really interesting word. And the fact that we all have a choice, that sounds like, but it's really revelatory that it's when you make that choice and you say, you know, I can choose to be in a grumpy mood all day today, or I can just look at what's going on and tune in and get aware and make that choice. But two things that really helped me when I started Willie's program, it was just over a year ago, and I started meditating, I became aware of that internal voice a lot more. And I didn't realize how much I evaluated and judged everything. And I work with clients. So the meditation, you know, Willie knows all of this, how life-changing. I've never stopped going on about how much it changed my life when I came upon his program, because I started meditating every single day. And then parallel to that, just at the same time, just in terms of talking about the voice and observing the voice, I happened to stumble across a book somebody recommended to me called The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer, which is all about watching your thoughts. So it's about stepping out and observing, because he realized one day that he had this, he's like, do you ever stop and actually listen to your inner voice? And so it's all about that. And it was really a life-changing book for me. I was like, wow, that's what I'm doing now with the meditating. I'm realizing this inner voice and I'm learning to tune out. But just in terms of Willie now talking about the mini meditations or whatever they're now called, with my clients, so I'm getting a lot of my clients at the minute. So I work as a coach, and a lot of my clients at the minute are talking to me about feeling overwhelmed. And like that, it's all evaluating, judging. There's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of them in a really stuck place at the minute. So I thought, right. So every time I hear this, first thing I want to do is say, please meditate. But, you know, you bring up the word meditation and not everybody is quite open to it. So I thought, how am I going to get around this? So you bring up the word flow as well, doesn't always click with them. So I found a way around it where I start talking to them about, start talking to me about something that you really enjoy doing, where you just lose all sense of time and you get really, really absorbed in it. And initially they're like, what's she asking me this for? But once they start talking to me about that, you know, then I start going, so, you know, when you're not feeling carefree or you're feeling overwhelmed, or could you possibly do a bit more of that to go in? And that for me is the way that I have managed to get around talking about, because one, I'm not really qualified to go into any technical details about meditation or flow, but sometimes if they're open enough, I'll say to them, look, go and check out Willie Horton on Facebook because you need to start meditating. Or I'll just say, you know, have you ever considered meditating? Or, you know, do you understand what I mean if I talk about flow? And I kind of I'll know by my own clients whether they're open to it or not. But I just really like your point, Dennis, about choice. You know, I think that's a really, really important thing that we have to remember. We always have a choice to choose, you know, in this moment. And that for me is really important.
One of the funny practicalities of these voices, I like to run short distances, 5-kilometer runs, and always around 2.5-kilometer point, one of my voices says, okay, you're tired, stop running. But the higher level voice, me, says, keep on running, you're not tired. And, you know, I'm not going mad, I'm not schizophrenic, but it's really interesting to hear that little battle in your brain. And I'm aware of it when I'm running because I'm focused on that. And I'm listening to these two guys going, okay, you can stop now. And the other guy goes, no, it's another 2 kilometers. And then you wonder, how does that map across the rest of your day? And yeah. Is it going on in the background the whole time where these guys are duking it out in the back room? And then the third part of you is, you know, the unseeming, unknowing outcome of all that. So it highlights to me the need to be just more aware. So the other thing I do when I walk my dog, it's a five sense exercise that my daughter did through some mental health training. In any given instance, can you see something, hear something, taste something, touch something? And I don't know what the fifth sense is. I forgot
feel,
my count.
Feel.
And that's wonderful. I feel a rock in my shoe. I see a green on a tree. I smell cut grass. And man, if that doesn't bring you back to the here and now, even in a mini, mini, mini meditation, maybe a micro meditation, 10 to the minus six, then, you know, it's a great little key to use.
So what I wanted to add was, well, first of all, there's a great, I think it's a 7 minutes long animation called from Disney that's called Inner Workings, which shows how when the brain is in charge of a day-to-day life, how that pans out and how the brain tries to shut the heart down. And the next day or after a while, the heart is then in charge, but the brain is still doing that. Well, yeah, we don't want to do that because, oh, you know. So that's a great, wonderful animation of just simply when the ego is in charge or when the heart's in charge. The other thing about judgment for me was learning detachment, learning about identity and a learning about neutrality. So with the identity, it comes back to if you have no one you need to be. So therefore, detaching from do I need to be a white person, do I need to be a black person, do I need to be a person from a certain country, from a certain culture, a certain religion. So by detaching from any identities of needing to then defend that country, that culture, that skin colour, etc., that creates an element of neutrality. But I also go beyond that. For me, I see everyone as the innocent baby that was born, and that any behaviour that is being projected towards me or that I see out there in the world is as a result of conditioning, programming, and also some, you know, some unhealed stuff within the body as well. So therefore, I can, no matter how horrible it appears to be, I do not react to that. But my response is to just remember that is not totally their fault, so to speak, until they awaken, and then it becomes their responsibility.
Yeah. And the responsibility is to make the choice that Justine was talking about. Now. And now. And now. And now. And now, and now, and now, and now, and now.
I think for me, what brings things back from being unreal or a dream, or, you know, whether you don't know whether it's a dream or not a dream, and things is doing a bit of gardening, because you realise that when you pick that lettuce that you sowed however many days ago it was, you know, you weren't dreaming when you were in flow, you were really sort of like absorbed in the moment when you were planting these seeds, but it still becomes a reality when you then go and collect it and eat it and enjoy the meal.
And you probably weed the vegetable patch in between as well. Yeah, because the thoughts are our weeds.
Watering them every day in this country.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Of course. All right. Are we okay for today? Dennis, are you... sorry, I shouldn't have asked that question, because if you read De Mello's book, Awareness, as he says on the very first page, in reality, all is well. It's only in the thought world or the dream world or the nightmare world for some people that all is not well. Right here, right now, I've everything I need for a perfect moment. All right. Unfortunately, I have to skip off. I know the last couple of times we finished with a meditation. Just wanted to tell you, and some of you know this already, a couple of people have asked me, would I help them with their meditation? I'm going to meditate 4 times live next Wednesday. I sent an email out with the link out to everybody who's on my email list. And I think I also put it in our Facebook group. I'll put it on the LinkedIn group as well, in case anybody wants to join in. I'm meditating 4 times because I've clients from Prague all the way to California. So I'll pick everybody up somewhere along the way. Well, everybody who wants to join in. Thank you very much, or Dennis.
Yes, thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank everybody for sharing.
Yeah, it's good to talk. It is good to explore, because it's only through exploration that we discover. Cool. This will be online in the usual place tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Enjoy.
See you.
You too. Oh, enjoy yourselves.